Community solar projects grow all over the state. Have you received flyers in the mail encouraging you to sign up for a share in a community solar farm? Are you wondering what this is and what it entails? In 2019, Maine passed legislation that spurred the development of community solar projects, and today we're seeing the effects of that. Dozens of companies have registered with the state as legitimate community solar providers, promising clean energy and a lower electric bill. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss community solar. Can it live up to the promise? How do you decide whether to take part? What's the potential for community solar in a state with long, dark winters? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. There are a growing number of ways for Maine residents to tap into solar power as an energy source. Today, we're going to clarify how community solar works and what the future of solar energy is in Maine. My guests are Dan Burgess, who is director of the Governor's Energy Office, and Barry Hobbins, public advocate for the state of Maine. As always, we invite and encourage your questions and comments. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. I anticipate that this is going to be a very high interest program, so if you would like to send an email or a tweet or post a comment on Facebook page, I would encourage you to do so early and make it brief. So thank you so much for joining us, both Dan and Barry. Dan, I'm going to start with you. Tell us about the legislation that passed last year and what it meant for solar energy in Maine.
Great to be with you, Jennifer. Thank you so much for having me to talk about this important topic. So in 2019, the Maine legislature passed legislation on a number of fronts to combat climate change and increase clean energy, done in a bipartisan way. That includes renewable portfolio standard of 80% by 2030, emission reduction requirements, and others. But it also passed a legislation related to advancing smaller distributed scale solar energy, so solar that's a little bit smaller than the utility scale, large scale projects. And so you're seeing really strong interest across the state from developers, from businesses and municipalities that are building these solar projects. And so we're excited about that, following it closely. And one component of that is the community solar market. And that's what we're here to talk about today.
Okay, so community solar, when you say small scale, you're talking bigger than solar panels on somebody's house, but smaller than some of the, for example, huge solar farms we're seeing in places like California. We're talking something that covers a few acres and that will provide electricity for what would be equivalent to a few dozen or hundreds of homes?
Yeah, so what we're seeing is, so generally for most people, going solar has meaning that you need to put it on your roof. But community solar refers to facilities that are shared by multiple subscribers who then receive a credit on their electricity bill for a share of the power produced. These are generally what we would call distributed or around 5 megawatts. So that could power multiple thousands of homes, but these are typically split up into smaller chunks. So not the solar that's going on your house or the multiple 100 acre projects, but more your 20, 25 acre projects of these smaller distributed systems.
Barry Hobbins, I noticed that your office has produced a video about this, and we've connected that to a link to that on our Facebook page today. Tell me about what consumers are seeing now. I have personally received flyers from two different community solar companies in the mail. I'm sure other listeners in different parts of the state have gotten these flyers or others. What's going on out there? How many companies are ready to go? How many companies are trying to sign people up in hopes that they'll be ready to go in the future? Explain this to me.
Well, that's the problem, I think, right now. This is all new in the state of Maine, and that alone is causing confusion. You know, people really fear change sometimes. My office is already fielding a lot of calls, a real strong indicator that people are confused or even suspicious. You know, as the governor rolls out and advocates for clean energy economy, we need to look at these programs. So we are stepping up our outreach efforts to help Maine people understand these programs. And I'm glad you mentioned the video that we did. That's part of our educational process, and we would have hoped, without the COVID situation, to be able to go into school systems and the like, but that will be a secondary step. We really are stepping out in to name people to understand the program. And I won't bore you with the call, but please check our website. These programs are different than competitive energy suppliers. You will still receive your monthly electricity bill. You will still be responsible for paying the minimum charge on your electric bill. And the rest of the usage costs may be offset by the community solar farm. Some community solar providers will send you a bill 45 or 60 days later for payment on the electricity you use. They will charge less than you would normally pay, and basically the savings will be calculated and passed on to you. It should be noted that there's no solar farms online yet that are part of this process. So we won't see savings right away. And I believe that the process will work well. It's a matter of education, and that's what the Office of the Public Advocate will play a role in. We don't take sides. We educate, and I think that our piece will be very important, just as the governor has highlighted the importance of renewable energy and looking at the carbon footprint with their bold and visionary establishment of, a very important part of the process, and that's the Climate Council.
Okay, so let me get this really clear, Barry.
Yes.
If I'm receiving a flyer from a community solar project asking me to sign up and promising me perhaps cost savings on my electric bill, that is not going to happen tomorrow or next month or even possibly a few months from now. What you are doing is creating a commitment to be a part of this project so that when it goes online, you are a part of it. And by committing to it, you're helping that community solar project get the funding and get the resources it needs to start up.
Well, as you probably know, people have received, literally dozens of offers. And essentially, what I tell people, and we've put out on our website, basically questions that are important for the companies to answer. First of all, the consumer should be provided with a copy of the disclosure form. You know, questions as, am I getting money or kilowatt credits on my monthly electricity bill? And to get the answer, you will need to ask if the offer complies with the Public Utilities Commission's rulings, Chapter 312 and 313. And also, the Office of the Public Advocate or the Public Utilities Commission can help you understand the response. So the questions ask, when will the project come online? When will I start receiving credits? Do I receive credits for a fixed amount or credit to match my monthly usage? Will this facility always generate enough to cover my usage? So what happens if I move? These are all questions that I believe that in doing the due diligence of customers or potential individuals who really want to be part of this community solar project, should answer. And then there's one, it says, you know, is this community solar company legitimate? And you can verify a company's registration information if you look at the web page. And also, really, it's one of those issues where we have had problems with the competitive energy providers, and we have not seen any fraudulent activity as occurred with the.
So far, everybody that you've heard from is talking about a legitimate provider, it sounds like. So, Dan, though, the way Barry's explaining this, this sounds kind of confusing. Give us the pitch. Why would somebody even want to jump in at this point?
Well, I think it's a really great opportunity to take control in many ways of your energy future, your electricity, in order to lock in savings. And so I think, again, this allows, you don't have to have that roof. You can, if you're a renter, you live in a multi-tenant building, or for whatever reason, the upfront cost is too much, it allows you to sign up to receive savings and to, advance clean energy. And so I think it is an opportunity, and I think Barry's right. Just like you're signing up for a mortgage, or if you're buying a car, or any investment you're making, you got to make sure to, do your due diligence. And Barry and the Public Advocate and the Public Utilities Commission have all created a lot of really good information. I'd encourage folks to look at that before signing up.
I think it's really important, Jennifer, that the average person who maybe doesn't have a solar panel on their roof will really buy into this idea as promoting a piece of the solar energy future. And that's why they call it, community projects, community energy projects in solar. And under this program, the regular person who might not own a house, but is a tenant in some place, can buy into this and really be part of the change in the vision that is being developed here in the state of Maine, in this country. By looking to renewable energy sources and looking at a different footprint for the future of this country. So I think it's really important, and it's encouraging that we've had such a response so far.
Joining us on the line now is Fortunate Mueller. He is president and co-founder of Revision Energy. Fortunate, thank you so much for calling in, and welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. So today we're talking about community solar in Maine. I know that Revision Energy has been a part of all kinds of solar projects in Maine. So I want to start, Fortunate, by having you explain really basically, and you've been putting solar panels on people's homes, on businesses for years. How is this different, and how would a homeowner or a business owner go about trying to decide whether or not to do their own personal solar project or to take part in a community solar project?
Yeah, excellent question, Jennifer. I'll try to be brief and explain the landscape a little bit. As you say, we build solar at all scales for all kinds of different clients, rooftop and out in the field and everything in between. We've also been building community solar here in Maine since about 2013 under the old set of rules predating the legislation that Dan mentioned in 2019. So there's really two different models for community solar. They go by the same name, but they're two pretty substantially different things. So let me explain them briefly. The first is the way that we have historically been building community solar in Maine and still are, which is what we call a shared ownership model. And in that model, the members, the individual homeowners who are part of the community solar project, actually own the system themselves. And they buy the panels, or they finance the panels with a loan, very much like they would if they were putting them on their own roof. And then they have sort of the same value proposition that you would if you were investing in a solar project on your own roof. They make the investment up front, and they benefit from a lifetime worth of free energy from there forward. And they actually own the system. And so that is very similar to the deal, the value proposition, if you put the solar on your roof And it might appeal to somebody who has sort of the same overall goals, but who can't for some reason put it on their roof either because of shade or because they live in a multifamily building or because they have a neighborhood association that disallows it or whatever. The second type of community solar we call subscription community solar, and that's most of what you are seeing flyers about and other interest in. As Barry and Dan said, that's opportunity there is a little bit different. In that case, somebody else is paying for the solar project, somebody else is developing the solar project, and you are essentially subscribing to it some fraction of the output, and you pay, you know, with no money down, you make no long-term commitment, you essentially agree to buy some fraction of the output at a price that is lower than what you are paying today for grid power. So that one is sort of a, you know, subscription pay as you go, save a little bit as you go, whereas the ownership model is more sort of invest and save over the long term.
And I understand Revision has done one kind in the past and you will be entering the subscription market in the future.
That's right. Until recently, the shared ownership model was the only model that was allowed in Maine. And so one of the things this new legislation did was to open up the opportunity to do the subscription community solar as well. And we think there's really need and room for both because they're, you know, they're two kind of different investment decisions for people. One of the things we really love about community solar is that it makes the opportunity to invest in solar broadly available. We think it's really important for this clean energy transition that it be an inclusive one and a just one. And that means everyone should be able to participate and benefit. And so it's beautiful now that we have both options. And we can offer them to customers and we can walk them through the decision-making criteria to say, did you do something on your roof or in your yard, or do you want to do community solar? And if so, which one of these two makes more sense for you?
Yeah, and we're doing this show today because this idea of community solar is kind of in its infancy in Maine compared to other states. But I'm wondering, Fortunato, what you see 5-10 years from now, is this one going to be completely mainstream? And are we going to be seeing community solar farms all over the state?
I think, yes, it will be quite mainstream and common. I mean, I think most energy world observers understand that we need to transition to 100% renewable energy as quickly as we can. And some of that, as Dan said earlier, will be utility scale and some will be rooftop scale. But some significant chunk will be in between in this sort of DG shared solar scale. And so I think it will be very common. And that's what we've seen sort of in healthy solar markets around the country, is that the healthy solar markets have opportunities for solar at all scale and for all customer types to participate, which would what builds broad support for these policies over time.
We need to go to a break. Fortunato, I understand you're able to stay with us for the hour, and I really appreciate that. We're also talking with public advocate Barry Hobbins and Dan Burgess from the Governor's Energy Office. We're talking about community solar. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Waterville Creates, encouraging you to support arts and culture in Central Maine by making your gift today at watervillecreates.org. And Bull Moose, offering an option of curbside pickup on books, movies, CDs, or video games. Curbside pickup is available at checkout at bullmoose.com.
In an Oregon hospital, a disabled woman fought for her life while her loved ones pleaded with doctors for proper care.
He said intubating her was a matter of risk versus quality of life. And I was like, but she has quality of life. And he looked at me and goes, oh, she can walk and talk?
I'm Audie Cornish, fighting for equal treatment this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Have you subscribed to The 10? The 10 is Maine Public's free weekly e-newsletter, our curated look at 10 exceptional, thought-provoking, and compelling stories. These stories are not necessarily from the front page, but rather those that you may have missed during the week from Maine Public, NPR, PBS, the BBC, and more. To sign up or to check out past issues of The 10, please visit mainepublic.org and click on the News drop down.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are learning about the role of solar energy in Maine and what opportunities are offered by Community Solar. Joining me, Barry Hobbins, who is Maine's public advocate, Dan Burgess, who is State Energy Director, and Fortunat Mueller from Revision Energy. Share your comments or questions via a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is David Costello, who is the Climate and Clean Energy Director for the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Thanks for calling in, David.
Good morning, Jennifer. Thanks for inviting me in.
David, how do you view the role of community solar in Maine? How much of a dent do you believe it will make in shifting Maine to more sustainable energy?
Well, I think significantly over time. One of the things I think is important to know, Maine's at about 86 megawatts installed solar. I think what you'll find is to meet our targets by 2050, we're going to have probably, you know, well over 5,000 to 7,000 megawatts in the state generating significant clean energy. So I think in time, as the folks who have been talking before, this will be built out over time. It will lower costs and it will help to address many of the issues going forward, as well as allowing Mainers, quite frankly, to generate and benefit from the production of energy. Right now, we're sending over $4 billion out of state and out of the country to pay for energy.
Well, David, let me ask you about that 86 megawatts right now and a goal of a few hundred megawatts. Put that into some perspective for people who don't follow energy issues closely. How would, for example, that compare to the former Maine Yankee Nuclear Power Plant or the amount of energy that's produced by natural gas plants in our, you know, and sent to our grid?
Well, in the state, just to give you an idea, in terms of wind, I can give you a number on wind. Right now, wind in Maine is the number one generator of wind. It's roughly 900 megawatts. The size of Maine Yankee in the past, I don't recall what that number was. But in terms of the New England grid, roughly 49% of the energy generated in New England, I think, is primarily gas. Natural gas now. So it's still predominantly natural, you know, it's still predominantly nuclear, coal, and natural gas. And we share, you know, in the New England ISO, the New England grid. So again, I'm sorry, I don't know the number. Dan may know or Barry may know the number for Maine Yankee.
Oh, well, I don't know you need to know exactly, but that is interesting to know that 49, I was trying to get a sense of how much. What is the potential here? How much of Maine's supply could be coming from community solar in the near term? And these goals that are set out by the Climate Change Action Plan, for example, with goals for, you know, 2025, 2030.
Well, to give you a sense, I mean, we, you know, the numbers I've seen, upwards of 5,000 to 7,000 megawatts to meet our target in 2050. So that's a significant increase over the 86 now. So, and, you know, the other thing to consider, Maine generation now includes woody biomass and you know, and also hydro. Hydro is about 31% of our generation. But again, in terms of building out over the future, this is going to take time. Community solar is a small part, as I think Dan mentioned, or Barry might have mentioned grid scale. Grid scale is going to be a big part of our development. The PUC recently approved close to 500 megawatts in the coming years for grid scale. Right now, as it relates to smaller scale, CMP, for instance, is saying they have applications, although we don't expect all of those applications to actually result in projects of over, you know, upwards of over 500 to 800 megawatts. Online for smaller scale solar, and with embedded within that would be community solar, as well as these other smaller distributed generation projects.
So, David, I'm going to ask you a real basic question that I suspect many people have right now, especially sitting here on December 14th and knowing that it's going to get dark at 3:30 in the afternoon, maybe even earlier if it's a rainy day. Is putting this kind of excitement and energy into solar really the way to go in Maine?
Well, it is. And remember, as we build out renewable energy sources, not just solar, but wind as well, they're variable sources of energy. So storage is going to be important. And that is something that is being built out and will be built out in concert with storage. So when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing, we've got backup generation, and much of that will be in storage. But of course, other technologies will be developed going forward. But certainly offshore wind is something that's going to be developed significantly. We expect, hope that maybe 5,000 megawatts of onshore wind by 2050. And of course, that's more reliable in the wintertime than the sun. So you'll see where the sun is a bigger player in the summer, of course, with extended hours. And in the winter, wind will take up and you'll see a lot more wind energy generation.
But so you see this is community solar is a piece of the puzzle.
That's right.
Yeah, it's very much a piece of the puzzle, but it's only a piece. And quite frankly, we'll need to address, you know, we'll need to build out all of these sources to make sure that our system is reliable and affordable in the future.
Well, David, thank you.
Quite frankly, being clean. Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling in and taking part. David Costello, Natural Resources Council of Maine, their climate and clean energy director. We have so many questions come in. I'm going to try to get to as many as I can. Mary on Facebook asks, I am curious about how many of these projects are owned by out-of-state or foreign entities, which seems to defeat the goal of having control of our energy infrastructure. Dan.
Well, I think there's a variety of entities which are, you know, investing in Maine right now. I think you've got obviously a Fortunate on the phone. They're a Maine-based company. A lot of the work happening to build these projects are, you know, happening with, you know, labor in state and are having local economic benefits. And I think one of the exciting things about renewable energy development that's happening in the state right now is it's not just in one part of the state. It's happening throughout. And I think with that come those more local benefits. And so I think, you know, we're at a very early stage of this renewable, this energy transition that we're going through. We have the least amount of solar installed across New England. And so, you know, we see it as an exciting time to advance that and to take advantage not only of the energy benefits, but also of the economic benefits that come with it.
Michael on Facebook writes, I'm glad there are companies taking the financial risk to initiate community solar projects, but what I see is mostly corporate community solar. How can we make this a true community or municipal endeavor in which the arrays are owned by towns or townspeople or co-ops? Towns already run water systems and water treatment systems. Are there any examples of municipal or community solar projects that put more of the profit in the hands of the off-takers? And Fortunato, I know that you've been a part of some of these projects. Tell us about a couple.
Yeah, well, that's a really good question, Jennifer. I think, you know, the shared ownership community solar model is exactly as the writer describes. You know, it's putting to use local investment, and then the benefits obviously stay locally as well. One of the challenges with direct ownership of the solar system by municipalities specifically is that municipalities don't pay income tax and solar benefits from a federal income tax credit. And so direct ownership of solar projects by municipalities can be challenging. So some of the ownership models that you see are a result of sort of working around trying to capture those tax benefits while also leaving the benefits with the municipalities and the individual investors.
All right. We'll go to Ellery calling from Waterville. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead.
Hi. Another interesting program. Thank you. With the encouragement of more EVs, electric vehicles, and charging them overnight, as we're encouraged to cook our turkey overnight and run our clothes dryers overnight, are there any community efforts for community storage, pump storage or batteries or some to match the growth in solar, which I'm strongly encouraging?
Sure, Ellery. And Dan, this is what you're talking, or excuse me, this is what we were talking about just a few minutes ago, is this need to increase the capacity for energy storage, because whether you're talking about solar or wind, these are intermittent.
Yeah, I think it's a really great point. As we transition more to these sources that are intermittent, we'll need to develop energy storage along with that, particularly as we're seeing costs and prices decline. I think it's useful not just from an energy perspective, but from a grid resiliency perspective. As we, you know, go through our winter and winter storms, having more storage on the grid can, or at least at your home or business, can help help with those situations. And then I think, you know, we're going to be looking at opportunities to empower consumers to, and as is done a little bit in Maine, but potentially could happen more with time of use rates around when you're using your electricity. And, you know, as we look to electrify our vehicles and our home heating systems, we need to make sure that we're managing the grid in a way which is avoids those kind of costly peaks when we all could be charging or all at the same time, and doing those more later in the evening when there's less impacts on the grid. And so I think it's a really important question, and one that the Climate Action Plan discusses, and that we'll be continuing to talk about at the state level.
You know, there's one missing piece, and that is the idea of a non-wise alternative coordinator, and it used to be known as a smart grid coordinator. And the legislature, with the help of many environmental groups, such as the Natural Resources Council of Maine and other stakeholders, were very fortunate to put their thoughts together and to pass legislation and to set up in the Office of the Public Advocate this whole process. So instead of looking at putting more poles and wires up, we have to look in the totality of the situation. We can't do things the way they've been in the past. First of all, as you can see from these climate changes and the storms we've had, it costs a lot of money to do the rehabilitation and get everyone back in line. So that's, I think, one of the areas. The other area is that there's other things that need to be done by the legislature in order to make sure that solar will have a place. We don't want to go get a situation where people will be frustrated because of the cost involved. And so we're going to have to, I think, amend the new laws to make sure that we have a system that will not discourage solar energy. And that needs to be changed. There's a bunch of, you know, it's like anything else. We passed a very comprehensive process, but the legislature is going to have to tweak it in order to take away the criticism that solar costs a lot of money and the ratepayers will have to pay more, because they're rectifying legislation that can take care of a lot of that. And fortunately, the Legislative Committee of Jurisdiction and the Governor's Office and the legislature in whole have really changed their attitude towards solar in a very short period of time.
All right. Thanks so much, Ellery. And that's a really interesting point, Barry, one I was hoping to get to during the program. I'm going to go to Kay, who's calling from Brunswick. Kay, I understand you are with one of the subscription community solar companies. Tell us about it.
Thanks for having me. And thanks to everybody else who's been talking up till now. It's been fascinating. My name is Kay Mann. I work from a home office in Brunswick, and I'm the community outreach director for Power Market, which is one of the community solar providers. And we are getting ready to throw the on switch pretty soon in the first quarter of 2021 to begin producing both solar power for the grid and solar credits for customers. So I really, really appreciate Barry's work and the help that your agency is giving to consumers to help disentangle their confusion about all this, because a lot of people we talk to get very confused and don't know the difference between community solar subscriptions and just changing your electricity supplier, which is pretty much the only option we've had besides owning solar up till now. So I just want to.
So, Kay, tell us about Power Market. Where exactly are the farms that the solar farms that will provide the energy for the subscribers?
Well, we have five in total that we're working to subscribe right now. Two are located in Gardner, one is in China, one is in Belfast, and one is in Baldwin.
And how many people are you hoping to sign up? And how many people do you need to sign up to make the whole enterprise work?
Oh, thousands, lots. Yeah. And, you know, we're targeting mostly the residential and the small commercial class of meters initially. However, we do have a capacity at an additional project that's going up in Waldoboro for the medium commercial size and larger meters that can also accommodate them. So.
And Kay, let me go back to the question from Mary on Facebook. Who owns Power Market? Is this a Maine company or is this a larger national company?
It is a regional company, I guess I'd say. Power Market is really a software company that's started in around greater New York City area. They're operating in about 8 different states so far, and they've been at this about 6 years. They are not the developer who's building these projects. They're working in partnership with a company called Sunrays, who, as I understand, is led by people from Maine whose offices are in Portsmouth. And so Power Market has hired myself and 2 other people to do their outreach in Maine, which is one thing that sets us apart from some of the other community solar offerings that are out there. Some of them are not even coming to Maine or hiring anybody here, creating any jobs. But we are here and here to stay and making a big commitment in Maine and looking to involve more and more Mainers in these projects. And we're also looking for ways to give back to Maine communities. For example, right now we're doing a fundraiser with Brunswick High School to help them raise money to build a wind turbine on their roof of the school. And for every subscriber that they bring in to the community solar subscription program, we're giving that student group $100 towards their goal.
Great. Kay, we do need to go to a break, but before we do so, Barry, Dan, Fortunato, is there anything that you would like to bring up or ask Kay before we say goodbye to her? No? Okay.
No. Hi, Kay. Thanks for all your great work.
Well, thank you.
Same goes.
We admire each other's work a lot. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Kay calling with an organization, company called Power Market, one of the subscription community solar companies now operating in Maine. And we will be right back with more listener comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Sweetgrass Farm Winery and Distillery. Fine wines and spirits for your holiday table in Union and Portland's Old Port, sweetgrasswinery.com. By Friends of the Cotchmore Organ, presenting Christmas with Kennerly, home for the holidays, online now for home viewing through porttix.com. And the Lunder Foundation, in support of the Colby College Museum of Art, who are bringing the museum to you online at colby.edu/museum.
I'm Megan Williams, on the membership team at Maine Public. And on this day in Maine's history, in 1897, Maine political icon Margaret Chase Smith was born in Skowhegan. A member of the Republican Party, she represented Maine in the U.S. House of Representatives from 1940 to 1949, and as Maine's U.S. Senator from 1949 to 1973. She was the first woman to serve in both houses of the United States Congress, and the first woman to represent Maine in either. Smith ran for the Republican nomination for president in 1964 and was the first woman to be placed in nomination for the presidency at a major party's convention. Happy birthday, Maine!
On this day in Maine's history was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries, the Maine Maritime Museum, and listeners like you.
I'm Tanya Mosley. There's an effort underway in northern Montana to create the largest nature reserve in the United States. But it's a contentious battle between conservationists and ranchers who have competing visions for the region. We'll hear from both sides, plus get the latest on the pandemic. That's next time on Here and Now.
Coming up shortly at 12 noon after Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, Community Solar and What It Means for Maine. Joining me, State Energy Director Dan Burgess and Public Advocate Barry Hobbins. We're also joined by Fortunato Mueller, who is CEO of Revision Energy. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. We'll go to Helena, who's calling from Phippsburg. Hi, Helena, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I am all for solar, so please don't understand me. I think it's fabulous. But As with all new industries, sometimes when they are into investing and they have all this vigor to get it going, they actually destroy the landscape, much of it, in terms of how it looks from the road. And I feel that in our beautiful state, there is presently wonderful, beautiful places to drive through. And as we drive along, we greatly appreciate having that around us. And I wondered if this is the time to do it, to set up some zoning, to just restrict, for instance, a 100-foot swath between the farm and whatever has to be done and the road, so that whatever is there can still
sure.
be beautiful.
Fortunat, what exists now? What kind of regulations are there in terms of siting of solar sites and attention paid to scenic views or to other considerations?
Yeah, Helena, thanks for your call. I totally agree with you that we need to be really thoughtful about not just how much solar we build, but how we build that solar and where. In general, for solar at this scale, the distributed scale, those decisions are mostly up to the municipality. And so more and more Maine municipalities are explicitly adopting, as part of their land use code, a solar ordinance, which permits solar in some zones and puts restrictions on solar in some other zones, and lays out sort of a consistent set of rules that developers have to follow in terms of setbacks, in terms of screening and visibility and land use type. For projects over 20 acres, there's an additional state level of oversight at the DEP that happens as well. And so, there are rules existing around solar siting and land use, and to some degree, they are catching up now as solar is starting to come awake in Maine. But in general, we have seen, I think, Maine municipalities doing a pretty solid job at balancing, those needs.
And I would just add, I think that's a great overview, Fortunat. I think, as this industry continues to or takes off and continues to thrive in Maine, we'll need to keeping abreast of the impacts and potential changes that need to be made. You're seeing things like dual use solar be incentivized, where you can raise the panels and still conduct agricultural activities, whether it's farming or crop growth. And I think there are opportunities to provide additional incentives potentially for things like brownfields or landfill development. And I think those are all things we will need to make sure that we're continuing to talk about.
Helena, thanks for your call. We're going to go up to Orland and Margaret. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead.
Hi. I've had solar, two big arrays in my backyard and a little bit on the roof, which is not oriented well to the sun, so there was limited roof area. But anyway, I've had that since 2004. I'm concerned about having solar farms where the solar energy goes into transmission lines, into a centralized, business that utility that then sends it all over the state, and then you lose the advantage of local transmission. If these solar farms are feeding local areas, that's all to the good, because I understand you lose a lot of energy in transmission line, long distance transmission, and the advantage of solar farms should be local distribution.
Dan, I'm going to let you tackle Margaret's question.
Yeah, I think I appreciate that question, Margaret. I think we are, we kind of look to Maine's energy future. I think it's clear that we're going to need a mix of both your larger grid scale projects, these kind of community solars, solar projects, which I think you can think about as being in between, and then a mix of those really very local on the property behind the meter projects. And so I think, I think it's a really good question. And as we think about, our programs and incentives, I think resiliency and local benefits should definitely be a part of it. So I think it's a good question. And I appreciate you. It sounds like you were ahead of the curve going installing solar back in 2004. So that's great.
I'm going to go to a question, an email here from Jane. She writes, community solar is tailor-made for the cooperative enterprise model. Is the governor committed to helping community co-ops form around generating and distributing electricity? I'm not clear how the, quote, shared ownership model might or might not differ. Dan?
I guess I'm not 100% sure on the community co-op model that she's discussing or that she's mentioning, and the difference of, you know, right now these community solar projects, as you've heard from Fortunat and Power Market, they're, you know, the opportunity to sign up is now, and I think you're also seeing, you know, municipalities signing up to do that, and so I think this kind of local coordinated effort is happening through the community shared model.
All right, we'll go to Tom.
Jennifer,
go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Fortunat.
You know, the shared ownership model that Revision is building is not a cooperative model in that it is not democratically governed among the members, but the members do own the LLC that owns the system. And so it is sort of most of the way to a cooperative model. And there's, you know, there's some reasons of efficiency that we choose to do the professionally managed LLC rather than cooperative model directly.
We'll go to Tom. Yeah, we're going to go ahead, Barry, quickly. Yeah.
What I'm saying is these questions are very, very good. But what it tells me is it really means that there's going to be a lot of individuals who are going to be looking at this as an alternative or as a complement to their situation. And one of the issues that I believe will be necessary for the legislature to look at is that the idea of consumer enforcement protections. And right now, the competitive energy providers and suppliers have strict regimented rules that give the Public Utilities Commission some teeth. And unfortunately, the community solar companies in the process now is not under the auspices of enforcement action by the Public Utilities Commission. If there was any type of enforcement, it would have to be through the Attorney General's office. And so I'm going to be looking, as a matter of importance, at this whole issue of consumer protection and to make sure the consumers are well-educated. So the piece that the Office of the Public Advocate will be involved with, I think will address some of the questions we've just heard.
Great. We're going to go to Tom calling from Somersville. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi. When I look at my Versant Power electric bill, there are two components to that bill. One is for the amount of energy that I have consumed, and the other half is for the transportation of that power. If I join a CSF under the ownership model, will my transmission costs be covered also, not just the energy usage portion?
Barry.
I that's a really complicated question because you're talking about looking at the overall process of the grid system. Why it'll be interesting to do some work in this particular area is because of the apportionment of energy cost. As you know, the bill is broken down into two providers. The good news is that you will get a credit for the energy you produce, but there's still a commonality of issues involving the grid itself. And so those are the kind of questions that my office, through the coordinator of the non-wise alternative process, which was just enacted, will be looking at, because you have to look at this as a totality of the process. It's very difficult to look at it in segments.
Tom, thanks for your call.
Good,
I want to go.
Call.
We only have a couple minutes, so I want to try to squeeze in a couple more questions. This is a message from Jamie. He writes, if the legislation gets overturned, say LePage comes in with a conservative legislature, people will be obligated to hold on to contracts and the tax credits could get overturned. Dan, is this a concern of yours?
Well, I don't want to prognosticate on, you know, kind of future political action or activity, but I from my perspective, it would make the most sense if there were to be changes that they would be prospective and not not, you know, there's millions of dollars of investments coming into the state right now. And so I would hope that any sort of adjustments or changes would respect that. So I think it's a good question. I think any changes should, you know, make sure to take into account the investments that are being made in the state and the contracts that people are signing.
Sure. Going to go to Laura calling from Waterboro. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about solar panels. So we are building a vacation house in Maine, and our primary residence is in Boston. And we were shocked to learn that we cannot lease solar panels in Maine like we do in Boston. And we just don't like the idea of being, you know, 20 years from now in the 70s and having to dispose of a whole bunch of obsolete material for God only knows how much. In the future.
Sure. Laura, did you use the word lease? You want to be able to lease solar panels? Fortunat, correct. Is that a model that either Revision or others has considered here in Maine?
Well, the subscription community solar is pretty close to that, except it's not on your roof, of course. So solar leasing is not prohibited in Maine. There are just no companies offering it at this time.
Okay, so you would recommend if Laura wants to try to be a part of solar without having to take care of solar panels herself to look into one of these subscription solar companies.
Yep, I think that's the right way to do it if that's your goal.
All right. Well, Laura, thanks for your call. That's a good question. And a question also for you, Fortunat, but I think it probably would talk to other solar companies. If we buy panels from Revision, are we responsible for maintenance costs? You know, what is the expected maintenance cost if you do this personally instead of being a part of a community solar project?
Well, I think the answer to that question depends on if you're talking about a rooftop system. Yes, you own the maintenance cost, but it is basically zero on residential rooftop projects. Because there really is nothing to do. For shared ownership community projects, the members, the owners, pay for the maintenance, but we handle the maintenance on those systems, which is, you know, things like mowing and buying insurance and those sorts of things over the life of the system.
Well, it's also interesting, and I know we've just scratched the surface on this topic, and we'll return to it on future Maine Calling programs. Thank you so much for being here. The voice you just heard, Fortunat Mueller, who is CEO of Revision Energy. Also with us for the hour, Barry Hobbins, Maine's public advocate, and Dan Burgess of the Governor's Energy Office. Maine Calling will not be rebroadcast tonight at 7 because there will be a holiday NPR Hanukkah special at 7 and then President-elect Joe Biden addressing the nation at 8. Today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris. You can visit mainecalling.org for more information about our programs and to sign up for our podcast. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.